Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Daniel Miaris, and watch how a series of drawings on Instagram can lead to a bigger story. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 369 of the podcast with Daniel Miaris. Those that follow Daniel on Instagram might already be familiar with the characters that appear in That Neighbor Kid, his new wordless picture book. Getting to know the story behind the book, as well as the way Daniel's own childhood is reflected in those drawings, is something I think many of you will relate to closely. Many of us, after all, have had the experience of being that neighbor kid. And if you haven't, get ready to be peering over fences, to be curious at what those neighbors have going on, to be part of the story. Enjoy the listen. Here's episode number 369 of the podcast with Daniel Miaris. Welcome back to the podcast, Daniel Miaris. I'm glad you're here, buddy. I'm glad we've had a chance to talk before we talk.
Yes, me too. I'm glad we made it.
It's wonderful. I appreciate all to hear all the stuff that's going on in your life, to know what's going on in your life, and then to be able to have that neighborhood kid in front of me, that new picture book that you wrote and illustrated, but also that I've known from Instagram, which is cool. You're one of those people that made an online art thing become a thing I can hold. That's cool.
I feel like it's kind of cool. I don't.
You feel like it's kind of cool.
It was definitely an organic process. It's fun to see where it's ended up, which I don't know that it's really ended. I feel like it's just kind of a development of an idea and characters, and it's fun to see where it's come, definitely.
Right. So in That Neighborhood Kid, you've got this mostly wordless picture book about a boy who yep. is trying to build a treehouse, and a girl happens to witness him and tries to join, and ultimately, sort of harmoniously, they do. And I like that in the black and white art that you have, that moment of connection is where we see color start to appear on the page. I think that seeing things string together the way they do here, it works so well. It works really well as an Instagram thing. I get it. It's beautiful. But to have it packaged the way that it is in this book is really nice. So I'm glad that this ended up being something that we could hold this way, without having to recharge our device to see it.
That's a very good point. It became much more tangible.
There you go. But could you share, Daniel, a little bit about how you went from, well, maybe even share inspiration. How did you meet
the kids in this story? Where did this start to come from? Was it just an exercise, an artistic exercise, a drawing exercise that became something, or have you been pursuing a story in your head for a while?
Well, it all, as you mentioned, it all really started with, you know, one square little painting for Instagram where I had done this brick wall, and I had this little tiny, you know, round faced kid peeking over the wall at the viewer. So I was putting the viewer on the other side of the wall, and then I just called it That Neighbor Kid, you know, thinking of myself as a kid growing up in a neighborhood with a lot of other little kids running around. Sometimes I was that neighbor kid, and sometimes other kids were that neighbor kid. Kind of the shy, awkward kid that you weren't quite sure, you know, what they were up to or what their intentions were. But, you know, inevitably I would find, you know, that's how I found friends. You know, being that awkward kid, I would kind of go and meet other kids I didn't know. And it was about that moment in between being friends and not being friends, you know. That's really kind of where it started. And so in the Instagram feed, you know, I was making the viewer a participant in the story. And so every one of those images really relies on, you know, the composition and how that draws you in, and how, you know, you almost have to search and find and, you know, continue to reintroduce yourself to this character. And, but after doing all those paintings, about 75 or so of those little pieces, you know, my editor at Simon & Schuster at the time, Kristen Ostby, was saying, hey, you know, what's up with That Neighbor Kid? Is there a story to go along with that? Because before, you know, they're just little tiny snippets, you know, things you just scroll by quickly with your thumb. You might like it, you might not. But so I really started thinking about, well, what is the background here? What's going on? You know, what's this kid's personality other than just shy? And so I thought about that and really kind of went back to where I began, you know, that moment kind of in between not having a friend and making a friend, and kind of where that happens, that kind of magical little spark. And so I thought that would be the great basis of an actual story. But then it also begged the question, you know, how I'm always asking myself, how little do I need to tell a story? And that's, sometimes that can work against you, but sometimes I think you can land on something that's quite elegant and beautiful. And so I kind of went to work trying to decide how I was going to tell the story. And ultimately I said to myself that, you know, I think two characters are going to be important, and I can't just pull this off with one kid. Maybe I could, but I thought having two characters would be much more, give me much more room to play out a relationship and really touch on the things I wanted to touch on. And my daughter pointed out to me, my 8-year-old daughter, Stella, she said, Dad, when are you going to make a book with a girl character? And I said, wow, you know, Stella, you are 100% correct. And so I started thinking about her and starting a new school this past year, and how, you know, she would come home the first 2 weeks of school just crying, you know, just worried that she wasn't going to make friends, that she hasn't made a good friend. Everyone else already had their best friends. And, you know, it was just this, you know, it took me way back, you know, to my childhood. And so I started rolling that into my story, this kind of, you know, worry about making new friends and the anxiety. You know, I really do believe that good stories come from good problems. And so I'm always glomming on to these problems that I feel like are quintessential kid problems, and this still ring true to me, you know. And so those ingredients all kind of went into it, and that's how I started building it. But I also, as I started putting the story together, I also really like the idea of property and the physical separation of property, mm-hmm. and how that can kind of mimic relational separation. And so I had these, I thought, well, what if I have a child who is established in the neighborhood, and then her world is kind of disrupted by this new kid who moves in?
That's right.
And then I started thinking about because, you know, I live in suburbia and, you know, you look out and it's, you know, gone are the days of the rusted chain link fence. You know, everybody's got these wood, you know, these wood plank fences and they look all nice. And then I thought, like, wow, that fence is pretty beautiful, but I think it would be much more fun if I took that wood and made a treehouse out of it. And I started thinking about that process and, you know, and slowly bringing a fence down and it slowly becoming something that's much more conducive to relationships rather than walls.
That's,
you know,
right. That very specific action was one of the things that I picked up on and I really liked so much about it, that we have this girl peering over the fence to see what this boy is all about, just sitting under a tree or reading or whatever he's doing, just she being curious about him. But as she's edging closer, and there's all these places that she can look at him, right? She can look at him over the fence or through. There's a hole in one of the boards you've made, things like that. That there's yeah. ways that she can sort of peep holes to gather more information about who he is. But the fact that he, without hesitation, starts to really deconstruct the barrier that is keeping them from knowing each other, over what ultimately ends up being a task that involves them both and is made better by involving them both, I thought was symbolically strong for the kind of child this boy is and also the kind of relationship that the girl is seeking. So that was a great device to be able to use it that way. And it echoes with me the how little do I need to tell a story, because you almost are making a story and continuing to take things out of it by like, do I need this setting? No, let's tear down that wall. Do I need this? No, let's move this over here. I think that it mimics that nicely. And I think also any story, you did such a beautiful job with Float being wordless, a previous picture book of yours, and this book being primarily wordless. The way that calls the reader to read the illustrations, then to go slower and to take in and understand and articulate, even if just in their own head, what is going on and what the characters are feeling. I think removing the words allows a great deal more for the reader to be a part of the story and a part of the storytelling.
Yeah. I hope so. I mean, I've, you know, because of Float, I've had so many conversations about wordless books and how teachers and librarians are using them or parents are using them to engage their children. And that taught me a lot about the things that children notice or don't notice, you know, when they're turning pages and spending time with books. And, you know, and I told people that, and I say this now about just about every book I do, but especially for Float, you know, there was the making of the book and then there was the sharing of the book. And it was almost a second life because I didn't really understand my story until I started sharing it with people. And I think that's part of the joy of it. You know, at first it can be the anxiety of it. Like, what if what I intended in that neighbor kid doesn't really land or resonate with people? But at the same time, there's great joy in not knowing my story fully until other people start interacting with it, because we have the best intentions. But like, I can try to pack all those metaphors into it in a sly, you know, kind of undercover way and hope that some of it lands. But at the same time, you know, I'm just so grateful for the things I discover new about my stories. And to hear you point out some of these things, you know, mentally, I'm already taking notes. I mean, those are some great observations. And, you know, when I try to use the setting that the characters are interacting in as a character, kind of like I did in Pardon Me, but in a nicer, less predatory way.
I was going to say, except the treehouse doesn't eat them at the end.
Yes. But in that neighbor kid, I thought, you know, the setting itself, was a vehicle for moving the story along. And in a lot of cases, it was a, you know, a framing device for action or inaction. And so the reader can spend time kind of cruising around the composition and say, okay, this girl is hiding behind this little bush. And, you know, I can see the, you know, kind of the fear on her face, you know, that this board is popping loose from the fence on its own.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now I can see the little boy in his knobby elbows through the hole in the fence carrying the wood away. You know, you just start to, you know, I wanted to use the compositions to help the reader spend time there. Because I don't think all book spreads need to be fast paced and action packed. I think sometimes if you can linger on the emotional beat, or even the change in emotion, you know, from one spread to another,
yeah,
you know, that's the gold, you know, that's the realization. Realizations are made then, not just with the explosion or the, you know, the daredevil move.
I like in that slow pacing for the reader to observe. I like that when the two first meet, when the girl comes through the fence as he's going up to build his treehouse, for those that haven't read yet, and we see her back as she's nearing the top of the ladder, and we finally see on his face this look of frustration and anguish, because he's got all these boards everywhere and he's looking at his I assume what is his blueprint, his plan, and he can't seem to make it work. And then the next moment we have the face to face moment, and we see her smile as if of all unlikely circumstances, being up in this tree, standing across from this boy that has made her curious, that whatever he's doing has enticed her, and he's sort of completely lost to what to do. That smile, that confidence, that told me the situation's going to be okay, and that for her, she feels like it's going to be okay as well. Like she now is in her element, was something that, well, to share with the readers that, again, when you see it, that after that page, after they each say hi to each other, then bits of color start popping into the illustrations. They were previously just gray scale, and color starts popping in, and it feels like the moment of, well, for me, it almost feels like that movie Pleasantville, where they finally start to know each other, and like color comes to the world, and they're like, oh my word,
right.
This is so much better. But I don't know. There was something that felt subtle about it, and it felt like for the reader too, we were seeing, I mean, really what, there's no other way to say it other than the cliche way to say their friendship was blossoming. It was starting to bloom, and that's what happens in the colors as well on the page.
Yeah. And I, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there's so much anxiety kind of wrapped up in, you know, desperately wanting to, you know, find relationship and friendship, and but not necessarily knowing how to or who to connect with, and it, you know, and I saw that in my daughter, and I started thinking about that, and literally there would be a change in her countenance from day to day. Like I just remember, like a month or so ago, she came home and finally said, you know, she kind of bounced into the room after I arrived home, and she goes, you know, Daddy, guess what? I say, yeah, what, Stella? And she's like, me and Kennedy, I'll keep the last names out of it to protect the innocent. But she said, me and Kennedy in class, we had a talk today, and now we're BFFs. And there's a bounce to her step, and there's confidence in her voice, whereas, you know, just a few months before, like, she's literally in tears, kind of dragging herself into, you know, out the door to go to school. And, you know, so her world became much more colorful. Her world literally changed because of, you know, finding that relationship and making those connections. And, you know, to me, I felt like that, there was like a split second in the story where I wanted that to happen, and I needed to kind of communicate that visually. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, how is that meeting going to happen? What happens at the first face-to-face meeting between the two? Because it'd be easy to have them just kind of spying on each other the whole time. But to have them actually make contact and, and see how that was going to play out was critical. And when the girl says hi and he says hi back or vice versa, I think she says hi first because, you know, he looks terrified in that spread.
Yeah.
Like, uh-oh, what's happening? And the fact that, you know, she grabs the tool that he drops as he's going up the tree, I wanted the viewer to, the reader to say, you know, I see what she's doing. She's going to be nice and give him his hammer back. But when she does that, you know, me and my editor and my art director on the project at Simon & Schuster, we were kind of brainstorming. We said, what would, you know, how cool would it be if she offered him the hammer, but instead he offered her the bucket of nails? So it was kind of like that first sign that he's not just some weird kid that moved in next door. You know, he's actually pretty nice. And the fact that, you know, she kind of jumps right in and picks up, you know, the bucket of nails and the hammer and starts working on the project, you know, actually taking charge and, you know, helping him with the plans. And, you know, we like that kind of, you know, that turn of the tide, so to speak, and to empower her. Whereas before she was hiding behind a bush, you know, and now she's, you know, helping to run point on this construction project up in a tree. Which don't try this at home without the help of your parents, children. But
I had these two funny experiences reading the book that I really loved because it made me feel like there was even more to the story. Because, I mean, for the kids that read it who don't know about the story that you've continued on Instagram and the way you've gone with all of that, to see this just tiny, tiny snapshot of these two characters. Well, first, let me say this. When I read it multiple times, I couldn't remember when the color came back in, if there were hints of it before or if it only came after the high. And so I had this weird thing. Maybe it was also because we were reading it like in bed at night, and so the lights are a little bit dimmer. But I kept thinking I was seeing color before I was. Like, when does it happen? Is it happening yet? No, it's not happening yet. And that was really wonderful. And my son, so I can't take away. I need to give him full credit. So Jonah, he said after they were building the treehouse, he said, "Wow, Daddy, they must have taken down a lot of the fence." And I thought, that's kind of profound that you're saying that, because to look at the treehouse, if they were strictly using fence wood, they probably took the whole thing down. And how symbolic is that of what it means to take down those barriers that we put up to other people and really let them all the way in. I thought that was great. So just little thing that wonderful. I won't feel. Yeah. I can't read it again without thinking like, yeah, there's this long fence that you drew and they probably did take it all down.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, the idea that the barrier is, you know, visually oppressive and you kind of get tired of it after a while, where the, you know, me painting it, I almost wanted to tear it down, you know? And, you know, I just love the idea that, you know, sometimes when we're faced with those kinds of barriers, you know, there is the option, you know, to remove it or take it down. But in this case, they didn't just take it down. They repurposed it. And, you know, and I love that idea. And it's not just I don't think you need to beat people over the head with that metaphor or anything, but if children notice it and want to talk about it, I think it's very relevant and very important, you know, especially when we're talking about our differences and the things that seem to separate us, you know, no matter what they are. I think it's just important to think about that. And the color, you know, what I love and what I discovered about doing paintings on Instagram is I got back to, you know, just painting in black ink. And that's something that I've loved as a child. And, you know, and there's a subtlety to it, and there's a warmth to it, and this human connection, even through just working with a brush and ink. And so when I look at a page that's painted with just black ink, like at the beginning of this book, you know, there's color within that. you know, it's subtle, and there's subtle undulations of warms and cools, but there's just not a lot of chroma, but there's still color there. But then as you go, it starts to build in certain spots and get, you know, more integrated with the brighter colors. And so, you know, I think some of that might contribute to that kind of subtle, smoother transition. But it's good.
So.
I'm glad it kind of snuck up on you. I like that.
Well, and you keep the color, with the exception of some of the leaves that are pretty brightly colored. The blue and yellow, the sky and paint and all of that mixing, for the most part, is really sort of awash in the background. It's really light. It's really subtle,
right.
And there. And I think that yeah, it keeps what's important at the foreground. I also love, I have to say, I'm really intrigued with the cover. And I might not have even noticed it till just now sitting down to talk to you, but that cover feels like it may actually be a cover that happens after the story. Because of it, thinking about now on her reflection, looking at on the cover, her the girl peeking behind a tree where the boy's reading, but just how happy she is, how comfortable she is.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe or maybe not, it doesn't matter. But it's just nice to see, I guess, in this conversation that you and I are having right now, but also in the story that happens in that neighbor kid, it's cool to have this cover bring you back to the book, because it reminds you, for me, it reminds me of the resolution of the beautiful thing that happened. And then we go back to the story to see how we got there. Kind of like when you have a, you know, like a family photo album, and you put your favorite photo on the front, but it's all of these moments leading up to that that also make it so rich.
That's a great point. And, you know, the story starts out with, you know, kind of skepticism and a little bit of fear. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to lead with that on the cover in this particular story.
Let's show kids afraid on the cover.
I mean,
that neighbor kid.
Maybe there's a way to pull that off with like a big looming shadow or something. I don't know.
Or like the Stranger Things logo on top. Stranger Things, that neighbor kid. Book one, that neighbor kid.
Like those wireframe letters and the 80s synth music, yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Maybe so.
That's really taking us off track.
That's all good. But to show the, you know, just another aspect of that relationship, I think is kind of a, you know, just a sweet primer, you know, for the story, the kind of story that it is. And, you know, I don't, you know, like I said, I, you know, it's not necessarily a story of, you know, a lot of really dramatic things happening. It's one of a very subtle kind of relationship build. And I think showing an element of that, even if it's the, you know, once the relationship is built, I just think that's showing that kind of tender moment, like her, you know, her spying on him, reading that book, you know, I just felt like is a great little encapsulation of, you know, where they ended up. And that's okay. I think, you know, if you peek under the, you know, if you peek under the dust jacket, you know, in the case cover, you know, you get another view of kind of their relationship, maybe at a different point in time.
I like it. You did great work, man. It's really beautiful. I'm going to ask you a question that I haven't asked anybody before. I don't know how this is going to land, but I feel very comfortable with you, so I'm just going to go for it.
Let her rip.
No doubt. Is there anything that we didn't talk about tonight that you want readers to notice in this story? Is there something I didn't ask you about that you want to make sure you share?
You know, my hope is that, you know, the book takes people where they need to go, and that they can bring what they need to bring to the story, and it works out just fine. You know, there are things that I thought of, you know, especially when making it, that really ring true to me. the idea that when they're sitting there on the kind of the front stoop of their treehouse after it's pretty much complete, they're drinking their juice boxes, perfectly content. I hope that children, have a good time pointing out that the fact that, in the previous scene they started throwing paint at each other, and now they're sitting there and they're just covered from head to toe with paint, but they're calm and content and they're enjoying a juice box together,
Yeah, that's a great moment. That's a really great moment to watch for.
I mean, those are the kinds of things that, in this story that I feel like, if I don't slow down enough and see that in my own children, I'll forget about those things, when it comes to childhood and the way children kind of embrace life. As an adult, if I'm covered from head to toe in paint, the first thing I'm thinking is I gotta shower off. I gotta get some turpentine. I gotta do something, to make this right. But just to for a child to like sit there and be content in that kind of moment with the sun going down, kind of reveling in the hard work they've done and the fun they've had, but not giving two licks about being covered in paint. Those kind of tender moments, I hope people pick up on that. I hope people notice those things because those are the moments that make this story special for me. And and will always be, one of those stories that reminds me of the things that are really true and good about childhood. And then there's at the end where they're waving kind of goodnight to each other from their windows, where they were
Oh,
one where the
love
girl
its
was
friend, yes.
where the girl was once like keeping her eyes peeled on this weird kid. But the humor in that, I thought, I don't show the parents in the story, but I thought, man, their parents are gonna be so pissed when they see their fence has been torn down. So there's kind of like that moment when maybe the dad goes out to walk the dog in the backyard at late at night and realizes his fence has been bulldozed. Maybe children won't worry about that as much, but
No, but
parents
to
think
call out
like
both of those moments, it makes me feel very human as a parent to have the reminder from you to notice how we can go from fighting, play fighting, to just being in the moment and enjoying each other's company. But then also as a parent, when you go into a location of your house or yard and realize, what have they done? That's great. I love it. Well, Daniel, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Thanks. Thanks for making this book and for really the heart you poured into it. It comes out loud and clear, and I really connected with it and I enjoyed it. So thanks for sharing it with me.
Matthew, thank you so much. You're so insightful. And your son too, man. Jonah's amazing.
I'm loving the way he reads books. I mean, I think we probably all go through this having children, those of us that have children, or those of us that teach children and really listen as they're reading. But he's my oldest, and as we're reading, I'm learning to enjoy books in a completely different way because I can enjoy them through his eyes. It's really
No
cool.
kidding. That's amazing. I mean, I love hearing those things. I notice some in my children in different ways, but man, I mean, I know there's the whole, kids say the darndest things, but I think there's a lot of truth in there. It's not just kind of light humor. It's, man, that'll carry you for a long time.
They say pretty profound things. I agree. Well, on that note, talking about kids, I want to give you a final word to be able to speak directly to your readers, all ages, of course, but certainly the ones that we keep bringing up over and over as we talk about this book. So I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning, Daniel. Is there a message that I can bring to them directly from you?
Okay, so I've been giving this some thought, and this is a theme that comes up a lot in my stories, and it's only in hindsight that I realize that it does come up a lot. And it's this: your ideas have the power to transcend your circumstances. That's something that I hope for my children, for myself on a daily basis, that for other children, that we don't get bogged down in what's being done to us or where we're at, that we really do believe that who we are and our ideas and how we think has the power to, you know, to make a different path for us, to make things, our circumstances different, to change things. And if I could, and if I could help and encourage children to believe that, you know, I would be a happy person.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Jennifer Adams visits to share her My Little Cities board book series, illustrated by Greg Pizzoli and published by Chronicle. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.